Hey everyone, welcome back to yet another episode of the Forever Forward podcast. If you tuned into our earlier episode where Justin and I spoke about everything on what's smarter now, this is first of the episodes where we get guests in, or shall I say, where we get people in to talk more than both of us talking. So, right, and in any case, honestly, in this episode, my role is just to pretend to be a host. Justin will do the honors, and I'll just sit back and enjoy the conversation. But first of all, Renata and Shirley, thank you so much for joining in. Really deeply appreciate you guys taking time for the podcast.
Yeah, so look, I'd like to kick off and maybe do it alphabetically, because that might be the easiest way of making a decision, would be if you could both explain a little bit about who you are, what you do, why it matters for whom. I mean, not least because, you know, when we spoke before, you kind of both showed how you were on different sides of like occupier, landlord, clients. And also, I think we mentioned in that kind of explanation, it might be kind of interesting to hear how you got to where you are and, you know, the journey to where you are now. So maybe, Charlotte, could you start with that?
Yeah, sure. No problem. So I'm Charlotte Langtatter. I'm helping clients navigate the transformation of smart buildings in the global real estate setting. I'm currently working at CBRE for Google. I'm helping them with their smart building strategy across their global portfolio. So that involves engaging various stakeholders. And as you may know, Google offices are a bit like mini cities with many restaurants, gym, big event spaces, and so on. So the FM team, I would say, is like as important as the food team or the one managing gym, event space, and security. And so I'm helping those stakeholders to understand their global needs, turning that into use cases, understanding the business priority, studying the benefits and the return on investment of these use cases, and then helping them communicate internally to the leadership, for example, to continue having their buy-in. And in parallel, I'm helping connect teams together and breaking silos. So I'm helping bridging the gap between the non-technical or maybe like semi-technical stakeholders, and then the team developing technologies or implementing those technologies in the buildings. And well, how did I get there? Yeah, it's always a journey. So I started as a design architect. I've been working in France and in London. Then I moved to project management when I relocated to Asia. And then the biggest transition was actually when so I was finishing the headquarter extension of Google in Singapore, and they wanted me to stay engaged. And so they asked me if I could manage the APAC portfolio in terms of cybersecurity. I remember actually I was like, it was, you know, like Friday after work, and I turned back and I was kind of asking if they were talking to someone else, because my background is more design architect. But I like challenges, so I just, you know, and I was really intrigued, so I just took this role. And so I was coordinating the work between surveyors, subject matter experts, facility management across APAC, all this to ensure that their existing buildings were safe in terms of cybersecurity. And it was like 5-6 years ago, so it was still quite new in the industry. So it was really interesting. And then when I moved to Europe, I took this global role around smart buildings. So just in short, like why it matters to whom? Well, my role is to create the link between stakeholders who have needs and then the delivery team or the one creating technologies. So basically linking tech, non-tech, and semi-tech group of people. So making sure that the solution is tailored to the stakeholder needs, identifying benefits, having like proper user experience, and then helping with fulfilling strategic objectives like sustainability, efficiency, productivity or like the health of occupier.
Thanks. And Renata.
Hi. Thank you for having me. So I'm a smart building consultant too, but I work mostly with landlords and developers. In my role, I focus on helping them define what the building should do, what type of functionalities, what type of data they want to have, and help them define the technical requirements for BMS, access control system, parking system, everything that really comes to the building, and then link it to some smart platforms, occupiers platforms, building apps, and so on. I got here really by, you know, similar journey to Charlotte. I was not working in the area. I was actually an HR business partner, and I was responsible for development of people in my previous company called Skanska, which is a major real estate developer. And I had a huge passion for innovation workshops and for working with new ideas. And from that, I grew into their innovation manager, and I started to put technology in the buildings we developed around Europe and also in the United States. And I have learned so much through trying and making mistakes, choosing right partners, choosing wrong partners. And after years of doing that, I decided that it's time to use my experience and help others, especially in transformation of projects, retrofits, and creating new standards for industry. I also became SmartScore accredited professional and WiredScore, and I'm quite a big ambassador of the certification schemes. I believe that, you know, it really brings a value in creating a roadmap of how we can go with it. And I kind of wonder, like once a year, like, is there something more that we can do in this area? Like, we almost digitalized everything. And every year something new comes, and I love trying new things. So recently I also founded a startup that's doing digitalization of waste production in office buildings. And, you know, I'm keeping myself really curious about what else we can do.
Great. In fact, it's so fascinating. My cat decided to join us, but the... I've had to ask him to go away. I think that means someone wants to be fed. But like when we were kind of discussing like what it was that we might discuss and why, and I think we kind of thought, you know, given that you're both involved in some strategic advisory for both the two sides, that maybe kind of framing what we discuss around a sort of strategic triangle of where is the industry at? Where is it heading? You know, where should it be heading, and why? And then how do we get there? So if I kick things off and say, where are we at? And maybe this time start with Renata. Is there anything, I mean, that you would like to sort of, you know, give an idea of like maybe problems, challenges, or successes, etc., that you think would be kind of interesting for the listeners?
So I'm working with smart buildings for almost 10 years now, and I would say that if we look at the innovation curve, the smart buildings are in early majority. You know, first we have innovators, then we have early adopters, and then we have early majority. I basically see that every single office building, every single shopping mall, every single warehouse that is being constructed now has some form of smart solutions. No one is leaving this behind anymore. I feel like occupiers are not asking, why is this only marketing? What do I get? They turn into asking, how do you deliver it? What exactly? So
is that like as usual is what you're saying? Smart is now business as usual?
I would say so. It's becoming business as usual. Every retrofit that, you know, happens also has some form of smart. And some people, some developers, some landlords, some occupiers, they do it in a more advanced way, and they are still pioneering with new solutions. But most of the market, I would say, is doing something. And what is really pushing the curve today is ESG, because we need data. And suddenly everyone has to report their carbon footprint. They need this information. So they want to have automated data, they want to have systems, they want to understand how buildings are performing. And on the other hand comes the way we change, we work, we live, we travel. Thank you, COVID, I really appreciate. But, you know, these two together, it's like, okay, if we're using our assets in a different way, we need something to manage them. We need data from them. So if we're looking at energy consumption data, we also want to compare it not only to square meter or square foot, but to how many people we have in the office. Are we consuming more energy? Are we spending more water? Are we producing more waste, even though people are not coming to the office? Or is it related? Yeah. So I would say today we're in a really interesting moment. I feel like there will be more and more work for us, for smart building consultants, and still way to go. But no one is asking, should we do it? They're asking, how do we do it?
I can see Umesh nodding because he said that sustainability was the key driver when we recorded the intro to the series. Mm-hmm. For you, is that the key driver, or do you see others, or do you see other challenges that kind of are facing, which are kind of, you know, maybe a barrier, despite people saying, you know, the why is now pretty much established, but it's the how?
Yeah, I think it's we are clear on the need for smart buildings, like achieving sustainability goals or the push with hybrid working. And it's also clear on like why we need smart buildings. So I think there is a big shift between before it was good to have, you know, smart buildings, and now it's more like must have. And as Renata said, is on new buildings, there are now like more and more like some elements of smartness, I would say. I wouldn't say we are there yet in terms of like business as usual. We are getting there slowly. But when we are looking at existing buildings, you know, like at the moment, they don't have much data. And if so, the reporting is really manual. So like, for example, metering, a facility manager would go in the building and take notes manually, or then put it in a sheet or Excel documents and so on. So there is still like, we still have lots of those existing buildings also having devices working in silos, which doesn't help with efficiency. And then when we look at the, you know, smart buildings, which basically the definition of, you know, smart buildings having diverse technologies which collect the data, connect the information, analyze the data, and then eventually suggest action. We need those buildings to be smart. And what is great is, with the net zero target, for example, I mean, so many big companies have given themselves a deadline in achieving this goal. So it's really giving a major push for the implementation of smart buildings. And that's what we were missing somehow. Often is like innovation is missing some deadline somehow, or like you need a bit of a, you know, push, commitment. And then maybe less, but still is the transition to hybrid, with, you know, many companies having their employees splitting their time between the office and the remote work. Well, you know, that's where smart buildings come into play, offering insight into how the space is occupied. And then maybe more related to, I would say, maybe intangible benefit is around the comfort and the well-being of the occupant. Because we speak a lot about the health of the planet, but the health of the user is equally a priority, and maybe it's a trend which mainly came after COVID and has made a big push in technologies. But now we have more and more smart lighting or advanced air quality monitoring, or maybe like personalized climate control. So I think, yeah, like we are getting there, but the question is, can we get there faster? And also like how, Yeah, the how I think is kind of getting there as well, but we it's not yet business as usual.
So Justin, before you say, I'm trying hard not to ask questions. So no. I'll just wait for my turn. I'll not derail the conversation right away. So just wanted to warn you.
Right, I think you can when you like, but the I guess you know that's where we're at, and where do you think that? I don't know if it's where things are heading or where you think they should be or could be heading. Is there any kind of sort of direction of travel that you think is kind of you're seeing or you think is important? Let's start with Charlotte this time.
Yeah, well, I think like one of the agencies to achieve the sustainability goals. And there is also a high priority to better be informed on how the space is occupied to drive efficiency in the building and inform future design. So I would say like an example with smart buildings, we can, you know, identify when a floor is unoccupied. So then the light would turn off and then the temperature and ventilation would be also adjusted. So solving the occupancy use case not only streamlines the office operations, but also contributes to the sustainability goals. And then another example is if we look at the building energy management system, which responds to demand, making energy usage smarter and potentially reducing the consumption by 40%. And then if we add another layer, we integrate, you know, like data around occupancy, the season, the weather forecast, and then, you know, like any, let's say like other events like strike and putting the scenario of, you know, it's Wednesday, peak office time, and then suddenly it's snowing on this day or like there is a strike. So smart buildings can help anticipate these situations, enabling better planning for facility management, security, food services, and other stakeholders. So the more we link the information together, the smarter the building is. And then essentially, I think where we want to get is also drive the benefit for like smart buildings. We are asking, you know, investors or leadership to continue basically putting money in it. So we need to also show the benefits. And what is great is it's there. Like, for example, if we look at the energy consumption, we can have having granular energy monitoring, then we can have a reduction of costs by 15%. And for water monitoring, it can be reduced by 30%. So looking at just like one building is already big saving, but then when we look at the whole global portfolio, it's, you know, it's really like significant savings for these smart buildings.
I would say
getting the data, connecting the information together, and then driving benefits.
You beat me to it. I was just gonna say I really like that progression of that you've outlined it there. Renata, and what about yourself? I mean, you kind of also mentioned, I think, ESG when we were sort of thinking about what we discussed and how that might help drive retrofitting, etc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see, often when I speak with owners, we like look at the asset from the life cycle perspective. If you just prepare your asset, you want to make it attractive because you only make money when you lease it. Yeah, when you have users there, someone pays you rent. So putting smart building technology allows you to get clients faster and better clients, premium rents. When you have actually start operation in the asset and you have users already, having smart building systems support you in operational way to generate savings, as Charlotte was talking about, on energy, water consumption, and so on, but also just like from a human perspective, you know, not having those technicians to run around the building and write down the meters on a piece of paper to then sit down on a computer and put it in Excel, because that's time and time's equal money. And in the end of the life cycle, when you're thinking of divesting an asset, having smart building technologies that are integrated and are done in a good way, in an efficient way, you can get a premium on the asset value. Yeah. And all of this through life cycle requests a really good thinking on how those things will link together and how, from operational perspective, it's not going to be extra work, but it's actually going to be a good work. So what Charlotte was talking about, integrating and matching the data from different systems to allow to perform better, I think it's the key of our goal for smart buildings. And I really hope that AI will help here, you know, because ESG is the goal, and AI and technical solutions are like how we get there. I personally work with system integrations a lot, and it's pain in the ass, if I can use that word on the podcast.
Technical,
you know, it's so difficult.
I'll make sure that we beep it off. That's okay. You can express your feelings.
You know, like, there are so many different access control systems. There are so many different BMS systems. There's so many different parking systems. Like, if you want to have data of how many cars come in the building, to how many people, which floors they're going to, from elevator system or access control system, to then, like what Charlotte was talking about, the weather predictions, the how the sun is moving around our facade. Like, to integrate all of this is very difficult. So if we can use artificial intelligence that will analyze data and be kind of a facility manager between those systems, to feed those systems with better information on how to set temperature on the sixth floor, seventh floor, how to, you know, turn on the light, turn off the light, how to follow individual user. And I think that's something that's still in our future and will help a lot. Like, we see that if you connect simple facility management AI to only manage heating, ventilation, air conditioning in the building, you can save up to 25-30% of energy. It's crazy. And no human can do that individually. They would have to sit in front of computer all the time and they would not be able to do so.
I think we should have a podcast in a few years, you know, like when we can look back and say, like,
yeah,
you know, and we look at all the benefits.
Mm-hmm. Or probably the bot would be recording the podcast and the bots would be talking and we'd probably be having coffee somewhere else. But Justin, I warned you, and I probably can't stay back from with questions any longer. So just to have a couple of questions for Charlotte and Renata. I mean, very interesting. You lay down that sustainability is probably the prime driver, right? And the cost savings that people are looking at, asset owners are looking at, is either from energy or water. Are you also seeing them worried about the operational cost from the point of view of maintenance of the assets? And when I say the assets, I mean the mechanical, electrical assets that are there. That's there. And are you seeing some bit of traction there or challenge there? Would love to know your opinion on that as well.
You know what's very different in the market I work, Central Eastern Europe, is that 50% of our buildings are 7 years and younger. Lots of new assets. It's like, it's crazy because, you know, of the history. But I don't really see, because of that much worry about the equipment, about life cycle of things. It's like, okay, our building gets older, we're going to do the big review. Like, when I do audits of buildings and verify their systems, often asset management platforms are left in the last priority. New buildings will utilize BEAM and will do a facility management on BEAM and actually care for, you know, how long my equipment is going to work, how well it's going to be maintained to keep the air quality on a good level, to keep energy consumption on the right level. But there is definitely a lot of room to address this.
And yep. Charlotte, are you finding something different in the kind of customer, I mean, across the work that you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like the maintenance or like you know, fault detection, remediation, notification is one of a key use case which keeps on coming, you know, as a high priority. Mm-hmm. There are lots of FDD solutions, which so is kind of we are getting there. Maintenance or predictive maintenance can reduce massively, like the FM, you know, the time for facility managers could be up to 30%. So it's quite of like really big benefits. But I think this element we are looking at more being proactive, and I think maybe we are not there yet, where we are looking more at being reactive, having the data, collecting the data, and eventually then the suggestions of, you know, of action might come mm-hmm. later, but maybe less of a priority. Makes unfortunately sense. I mean, we want everything, you know, to happen, you know, at once, but we need to set also some priority. And
that's true.
Yep.
Back to you, Justin.
Yeah, well, Renata also mentioned building performance and utilization data, but those two things may actually come into sort of like how we get there, as opposed to where we at, where we need to be. I mean, so if we kind of go on to the sort of third bit of a sort of strategic triangle and how we get there, and I think it's kind of over to Renata this time to start with. And I think you mentioned, and it's interesting because I ran a round table on Tuesday with mostly kind of design engineer, design consultant, MSIs, MEPs, some platform providers. And certainly the whole area of definitions, certifications, standards, and regulations was much discussed. And you've mm-hmm. touched upon this. I mean, particularly, I think, and you know, maybe I should just hand that over to you in terms of why they're important, how they can help us get there.
I became an ambassador of certifications after I really studied a program and became an EP. I was like, for many years, trying to build my own definition of smart building. I had this like huge matrix of like what consists of smart building, broken into like three levels: hardware, software, data, and so on. And when I went through the certification program, I was like, okay, finally someone put some global standard, because as great my matrix was, it was my matrix. And when I was explaining it to clients, they would always be like, are you sure we're not missing anything there? And when we have a global standard, we have a stronger push that everybody like can benchmark to that, that understand what others are doing, and that there is an organization that has an R&D team that is actually taking care of it. So like the trust from the investors, from developers is huge. And we can faster get buildings smarter, you know, because not everybody is trying to invent the wheel all over again. And one developer saying, I'm doing smart building because I have great sustainability software that's helping me to save energy, water, and so on. Another will say, I actually have smarter building because I have great experience for people. They can open door with a smartphone. They can, you know, come with their car. They will be recognized, and so on. Different perspectives. Finally, we have one perspective that it's pushing the market to go. And with this tool, owners can replicate solutions over the portfolio faster. I find it very helpful, and I see that clients decide faster. They are like, okay, we have to do this, this, and that. Let's go. Let's do. How much? Let's go. Can you coordinate? Okay, you coordinate. Let's go. And I feel like we need this speed, because as Charlotte said, buildings that exist are not there yet. Buildings that are being constructed, that are being renovated, yes, they pay attention to technology, but buildings that stand for many years, they have long leases, the only push they have is ESG. Yeah. Or when they are like in some difficult locations and occupiers will be moving out and they try to attract someone new. So I would say ESG, thank you. COVID, thank you. Certifications, thank you. And now let's get the speed. And I can see by my own work of like how many buildings I used to do a year at the beginning and how many I have now on my plate. And it's like, you know, we're running, we're sweating, we're running, and we're doing things, which is great.
It's interesting about this, because one of the, you know, there was a sort of discussion about nomenclature, basically, or is that the right word? And they did make a distinction between the certification, like a wired score, and also standards, because they see standards, they see certifications as being something you pay for around because you conform to a framework or a set of criteria. And they saw standards as something being as best practice, whether that's, you know, and there being lots of existing standards out there already in both IT and OT, which would make certifications easier. So like IET, IEEE, ISO, you would see those as being standards. And they're
but
being...
you also pay for ISO. And, you know, I should not maybe say that, but I have clients that design projects according to certifications and do not do certifications because they don't have money for that.
Sure, yeah.
But they are prepared. And in case there is an investor that wants to buy a building with the certifications, then they will do it. But they use the certification as a standard that they design to. So then they can really have global standard of solutions.
Interesting. Charlotte, because you mentioned some similar things, but also kind of highlighted a number of challenges that you thought needed to be overcome.
Yeah, I think, as Renata was saying, I think the standardization is one, and maybe it ties actually to the like ask for collaboration in the industry. When we look at existing buildings, you know, they have devices working in silos, and that is, you know, why they are not smart, right? But when we have smart buildings, we need to make sure that actually technologies are sharing information, and they are also designed this way. So it shouldn't matter if the technology is from one vendor or another. Solutions should be designed to work together. So for example, if there is then all technology which needs to go to a dashboard, it should be really smooth. And so I think we still need to have like a push in that to better work collaboratively. Now it's a bit like kind of ideal scenario because the industry, you know, I mean, is competitive and that's how it is. But I think like through actually like those podcasts, networking, sharing a bit more about this topic helps. So that's, yeah, I would say like that's one challenge. Another one, which is quite major and can be quite of a blocker actually for smart building is, well, we have like, you know, all devices and the amount of connected sensors and connected devices, it just keeps on growing. But the problem is like it brings a lot of risks as well. And there is this example of a factory. So they had a building management system which was hacked. And, you know, they have put a lot of effort fixing the issues, wiping out the memory of all their computers, reinstalling everything. And then a few minutes later, like it was still infected. And so they have done like that, you know, like many times, and the intrusion was still there. And eventually they found out the intrusion was coming from a coffee machine. And, you know, it's like those coffee machines. So basically it was like a smart coffee machine, the one which are connected to the internet and can place supply orders automatically, which is great. The problem is, you know, instead of being connected to an isolated Wi-Fi network, it was also connected to the, it was actually connected to the local control room network. And so that was basically the entry gate. And there is also like an example where in a casino, casino in London, I think, was hacked via an aquarium sitting in the lobby. And it was because of the like an internet connected thermometer. So it's just like to say that, you know, it's easy to have devices and have them connected and so on, but the risk of intrusion is massive. And it's only, you know, landlords or occupiers realize that when there is this intrusion. So I think it's, yeah, the industry should really be aware about this cybersecurity. And I think technology, like those who are creating technologies, that those technologies, like making sure that those technologies are already well secured, I would say. And then I have another third challenge, but I don't know if we want to pose.
Can I just jump in on cybersecurity, because I love the subject. There's so much of challenges that comes with it, but I also feel like, because we have made such a massive jump with putting technology in buildings, the biggest risk are people. Often I come to the building and I say, hi, I'm here to have the technology in your building. Can you please show me your BMS room? Yes, go. Can you show me your access control system? Yes, and I sit in front of computer, I have access to all data, often without validating me, without even like asking me for my ID, you know, like it's crazy. How many times I find during audits that security team has like one email and one password. And, you know, even if someone leaves from an operational team, they don't change the password. They have the same password for like 8 years to the system, you know, that's also online. So there's a lot of work around this matter.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fascinating, the whole sort of idea of penetration test and, you know, and that level of a security, because we kind of think about cybersecurity a lot, but, you know, old-fashioned security is just as important to access control. I mean, Charlie, you also talked about the workforce, and I think that was both around change management and, but also education and training of different stakeholders. Is that about a skills gap or?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it's also about, it ties actually back also to cybersecurity. When, you know, Renata was saying about it's the operation, and that's where the facility management team needs also to be trained or aware about, because we speak about smart buildings, but actually if we just take an existing building, like what is being installed in the building, how is it being operated? Is it all safe? And I think way too often what Renata has seen is, yes, like you know, like the team would put a simple password that everybody can remember. But if everybody can remember, then, you know, like it's also easy to hack. And it's the same with remote access. It's great to have remote access to the BMS system, but as much as someone can have access to it from their phone, you know, so, like then someone else could have actually take control over the building. And I think we don't know, like maybe like teams don't realize yet, like how much can be done, you know, with the intrusion in the building. But then for the workforce, I would say that like there is a lot of change for them. And I mean, the automation of smart building might reduce the number of resources who would be managing the building. But people are still needed to leverage the technologies. AI, I think, will do a lot of parts. But essentially, we can have all the best technologies in the world. But if the operation team doesn't know how to leverage them, well, we just end up with a stupid building. So the challenge we are facing is that facility managers, for example, or like other key stakeholders, they need to be trained. They need to be really brought up to speed on smart buildings. And so that's why I think really early engagement with them is important. And I think we should treat it as more as like, you know, a big change management. Because at the end, like they have been used to operate the building always the same way, right? And now we are asking them to completely change their way. So I think there is like this big change management piece here.
So, I mean, to sort of wrap up a bit, I mean, I can see, you know, UMS nodding his head in absolute agreement because he's very passionate about that sort of the change management workforce education aspects of all of this, but there being a skills gap, and often the people sort of sitting in the basement in the office with no windows are blue collar workers, not white collar workers, and they're being asked to sort of embrace a whole load of new technology being thrown at them without necessarily being the benefits of upskilling being made clear to them. So, but I just think, you know, you picked on this collaboration word earlier on. So It'd be interesting to hear from both of you. Where do you think the kind of low-hanging fruit for collaboration might be, given that you have raised these sort of, you know, Charlotte mentioned particularly the sort of the competitive realities. Are there some things on both your experience where you think, like, not just teams but also industry might be able to come together on certain things where, you know, where the competitive realities could be part or whatever? Renata, maybe first.
It's a little challenging, you know, but I must admit I love working with other companies that are perceived as direct competitors of Colliers. It's fascinating to see different solutions, and I often audit buildings for owners. So I work with property managers from other companies, and it's great to see different perspectives. And I think on a certain level, we all want buildings to operate well. We all want ESG to happen. We all want to save the planet, you know, for the better good. And I think this, you know, ESG, like, it's really tying things together. It's really bringing us together because we have the same goals. We need to get carbon neutral, and we need to learn from each other. Otherwise, we're not going to do it.
And so when you sort of you just kind of feed it in some topics that we might discuss. Can you see that around, like, building performance and data utilization or utilization of data? Is that where you can see some collaboration occurring?
Yeah, absolutely.
ROI metrics or something like that.
You know, in Poland, for example, we have a committee of research teams from each of the big agencies. So they validate their market data together. They, like, compare, if you know, they don't want to send to the market, like, reports that are fighting against each other. So they often, like, validate, okay, is this the same number of transactions you have registered? Is this the amount of square meters we see in the market? So the communication is the same. Of course, like, some findings are different because every team, like, will see something from different perspective and maybe do some predictions, but the base is the same. And I think for fighting with the carbon footprint, we should be aligning to understand, like, how some buildings got into the better performance rather than others, and learn from each other. There is, like, forums of, you know, socially responsible business, and such information, in my opinion, should be shared. I'm a believer in smart cities. I believe, like, you know, the society will benefit really if we don't hide this data. I would love to know how much energy consumption my neighbor has, because maybe I'm doing something wrong. Like, those benchmarks that, you know, show me, you know, how much I consume. Like, I don't know, do I pay less or more than others? Like, should I share something with them or should they share with me? This is a path I personally believe in.
I'm sure. We can see that actually, as an occupier, and it's like between occupier landlords, to achieve the sustainability goals, we need to have visibility of the rest of the buildings, and having also data which usually the landlord has. So there is this educational piece when an occupier needs this data. How can we explain why we need the data? What are we going to do with it? But as you said, it's kind of low-hanging fruit, I think, is sharing data, and I will reiterate on the cybersecurity side. But then, and maybe, like, which might help conclude this, is in general, you know, speaking at webinar, networking, I think that's where we can share information and better achieve generally our goals.
Well, that was going to be my last question, which wasn't on the agenda, and I apologize because I haven't given you any time to prepare for it. But I guess, like, given you're saying you're doing these other things, networking, webinars, etc., could you both kind of tell me like where someone might be able to hear from you next, or where they might see you? You know, you speaking at an event, are you both going to be at a webinar soon, or, you know, on a stage somewhere? So maybe Charlotte, you could start this time.
Yeah, sure. So like next, I will, I don't have like one coming up next. I'm going skiing next week, so I'll have a bit of a break. But like more in the future, it will be with PropTech Connect.
Right, okay.
So there is this event in London, in-person event at the O2 Arena. So that's where I will be speaking in September. But I'm sure I will have like other opportunities to speak before that.
I think you may be there too, Renata, right?
I will be there too, exactly.
I can see.
It's a good event, yeah.
No,
I'm just asking people to book my tickets. I should be there as well. No, I don't travel to PropTech Connect. But one of the points that I would just like to say is on the collaboration. I think there's a famous word that was used long time back: cooperation, right? Competition and collaboration. I think one way is larger organizations can really collaborate well is, and that's a basis. Very small step that could be taken is just do the case studies honestly.
Yeah.
This is what I agree. That's a very small start, but if you're doing the case studies honestly, could be a game changer, because most of the case studies are sort of often one-sided, right? They always tell about all the good things and not the things that went, you know, were done to achieve. I guess if that can even come out in a manner where you don't really share a lot of confidential information, but still give out learnings, could be part of, I mean, a game changer.
I will be publishing this year. We have in plan 6 case studies with our clients to also talk about what has went wrong and what did we struggle with. So join me on LinkedIn. I will be publishing them for sure in English.
I'm super glad to hear that, Renato. Well done.
No, that's great, because I think sometimes, you know, what is learned from failure is often more insightful than the happy accidents of success. And I would just throw one other thing into the mix, you know, and there's a sort of element of hope in this too. But I do think that there could be some collaboration about ROI metrics, because, you know, and performance, you know, looking at outcomes and performance, not just use cases, you know, what are the goals that people, the different stakeholders are trying to achieve, how does that feed into specification, etc. But look, rather than, it was never meant to be about what I think, this it was always trying to find out the perspectives from others. So I just want to say, look, huge thanks to both of you, Charlotte and Renata, for participating, and Umesh for like helping facilitate this whole.
I'll rephrase the thanks. Thanks for not asking questions, Umesh, is what you meant, Justin. Right? Perfect. I'll say the same in the next episode as well.
Well, look, thanks very much to all of you. And really look forward to putting this out and also catching up in person at PropTech Connect in September.
Absolutely. Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.